Welcome to Mentioned in Dispatches, the podcast from the Western Front Association, with me, Dr. Tom Thorpe. The WFA is the UK's largest Great War History Society. We are dedicated to furthering understanding of the Great War and have around 50 branches worldwide. For more information, visit our website at westernfrontassociation.com. It is the 1st of April 2025, and this is episode 352. On today's programme, I'm delighted to be joined by Michelle Admiral, a historian with a keen interest in military history and a recent MA graduate in military history from Wolverhampton University. Michelle's work focuses on the interplay between technology, doctrine and operations during wartime. And today we'll be discussing his research on the German U-boat campaign during the First World War. This is based on a recent article he wrote in the WFA's magazine Stand 2. And that's titled Technology, Doctrine and the German U-boat Campaign, and provides further detailed analysis on how this technology shaped strategic doctrine and vice versa. Joins me from his home in the Netherlands. Michelle, welcome to the podcast. Before we get into the details, could you tell us a bit about yourself, your background, and what drew you to focus on the German U-boat campaign of the First World War?
I've started my career as a chartered accountant with my own firm. Then I moved on to a supervisory body in healthcare and to end my career at the Royal Netherlands Institute of Chartered Accountants. In 2022, I retired and I've started a master course of military history at the University of Wolverhampton. And one of the essays was related to tools of war. So you have to pick out a tool of war and discuss it. And I was always fascinated by tanks, military technology, and also U-boats, for example. So I thought, why not write an article or an essay about U-boats?
So we're talking about an article you wrote in one of the latest editions of Stand 2. That is the journal of the Western Front Association. And you talk about the U-boat campaign, apologies there, and the interaction between military doctrine, weapons, and their development. How do you define these terms, and why is it important to understand this sort of complex relationship in the context of the U-boat campaign undertaken by the German forces during the First World War?
It's a special example how doctrine and weapons developments are very much related. Doctrine in general, there are of course several definitions. There is a NATO description, even a Dutch institute has described it as a set of beliefs about the nature of war and the keys to success on the battlefield. But doctrine in general, you could say, it is just the way we are doing things in war as an army, to make it simple. That's one part of the question. The other one, weapon developments. You may think weapon developments is about new technology, implementing this in the army, but it can also be about using already existing technology in another way due to experience on the battlefield or otherwise. And especially the latter is an example of the First World War U-boat campaign, is an example of the way technology was used in a new way. Existing technology was used in a new way. And an example in the U-boat campaign is the use of convoys. Convoys was as such not a new phenomenon. It was already used in the Age of Sail, but it was a bit forgotten. The main strategy of the Royal Navy was the offense, attack, not protect, but attack the enemy. And it was reinstated, the convoy system, during the U-boat campaign, and it turned out to be the real solution for the problems.
So Well, let's start by looking at the doctrine of the U-boats as they were used by the German Navy at the start of the First World War. Now, they were seen primarily as auxiliary weapons. How did this perception evolve over the course of the war, and what drove the shift to unrestricted submarine warfare in 1917?
The perception of the U-boat campaign changed over the course of the war by several reasons. When the war started, U-boats were mainly seen as auxiliary to the capital ships, but due to experience, that's changed. At the beginning of the war, some ships were attacked by U-boats. It was not a great deal. Then, because of the English blockade, it was changed, tactics were changed, and U-boats were now used to attack all enemy ships in an unrestricted way, but neutral countries were free. Then a neutral ship was sunk, the Arabic, which also Americans were aboard, and that caused a lot of confusion, so the campaign was halted. Then again, it's decided by the German government to start the campaign anew in 1916, again with political restrictions, and again an incident, another ship, the Sussex, is sunk, and again with American casualties. So the campaign is halted again and then restarted. And then that goes on between 1915 and 1917. And finally, at February 1917, it's decided to make it a total unrestricted warfare, and every ship will be torpedoed at sea. And in fact, that was the final way the U-boats were used in the war, until the end of 1918, when the restricted warfare was cancelled, but that was due to peace negotiations between the Germans and the British. So it's a rather confusing period in which political pressure and strategic aims are interchanged, and incidents are influencing the way the weapon is used.
And did the German naval, I suppose, leadership, did they seek to build more submarines from 1917 and 1918 and different types of submarines and halt capital ship development? I.e., I'm starting to think about where they're pouring their resources into in the second half of the Great War.
It was still the focus on building capital ships. There were large U-boat orders placed in 1917 and 1918. But to give an idea, there were not more than about 61 U-boats active on sea during the most intensive phase of the war, of the U-boat war. So it was still a dual policy. In one way, they were building more U-boats, but in the other way, building capital ships was still on focus.
Yeah, no, I was just interested to see whether they had, changed their, I suppose, their operating assumptions or their cultural belief in big, large battleships rather than small, less glamorous and less sexy U-boats. But it's really interesting. Now, the British respond by bringing in a series of anti-submarine measures such as blockades and hunting U-boats. What prompted the shift to the convoy system in 1917? You've touched on this, and why did it take so long to implement?
Yes, it was mainly because the main strategy of the Royal Navy remained attacking the enemy. You attack the enemy at sea, you prevent that he comes into the sea, and you hunt him down. It was not about defense. And the convoy system was seen as a way of defense, and that was not the way the war should be engaged. So they were trying to perfect the way to attack U-boats, despite the fact that it didn't work at all. Nets, mines, etc. It were all used during the war, but it didn't have that great result. So, especially when the unrestricted U-boat campaign started in February 1917, it became very problematic because reality showed that all the offensive measures were not working, and a large tonnage of ships was sunken down. So it became very precarious. And then it had to, there had to be political pressure to make the Royal Navy change their opinion. And one part was that what had been an experiment with French ships, coal ships to from Britain to France, and that was rather successfully with the convoy system. But still, the Royal Navy was struggling with using the convoy system or not. And it was a politician, Lord George, who had to make pressure on the Royal Navy to change their strategy. And in the end, it was changed and the convoy system was implemented.
So you mentioned the challenges of new technology in your article. Now, both sides obviously deal and develop new technology and countermeasures to other developments of their enemy. Could you tell us a bit about these technological changes and how they impacted on the effectiveness of U-boats and the measures taken by the British and the French to counteract the U-boat threat?
Yes, like I said, the British, the Royal Navy was trying to implement all kinds of new technology, for example, developing sea mines and acoustic measures, but that had not great result on the effects of hunting down the U-boats. They were really struggling with technology. There were experiments with aircraft. Aircraft would be, of course, important in the Second World War for cooperation with ships. But at the time, it was still at its infant, so it didn't work at all. And even with the convoy system, it also needed time to work out perfectly because you have to allocate ships, you have to organize, and it takes time to make it perfect.
And when we actually look at the decision of the Germans to implement their unrestricted campaign, obviously there are a number of times when they do this over the course of the war. It's made by a combination of political and military factors. So let's look at the political factors. How did these shape the German decision, such as maintaining the relationship with neutral countries like the USA? How did that shape the ultimate decision to wage this type of warfare?
You see at first that the Germans are very much trying to keep the United States out of the war. You see, by the restrictions that are made in the unrestricted campaign, neutral ships should not be attacked, etc. But at a certain stage, when the blockades gives more pressure, and when the results on the Western Front are not very promising, you see that they are searching for ways to gain some success, and then the factor of not taking neutral ships, etc., is diminishing, and there is also people who are investigating the effects of U-boats, and there was, of course, an admiral who has investigated the matter, and he predicted that if they would use U-boats in an unrestricted campaign, it would cause an enormous amount of ships that were sunk. For the Germans, it looked like a way out of the stalemate and a new way to realize a better result in the war. So it was also political pressure, because the assumption that U-boats would bring Britain to its knees, that wasn't realized when the convoy system proceeded and was rather successfully. The Germans didn't change their strategy. They just go on with producing more U-boats, trying to get more results. But they didn't change their strategy, because politically they were still convinced that this was the way to obtain results.
And then when we look at the Allied side, they obviously develop a whole series of measures, depth charges, hydrophones, minefields. You've mentioned some of these already. Which of these has the greatest impact, and how did they shape the U-boat campaign, especially towards the end of the war?
Like I said, you would expect that it would be by defensive nets or sea mines or attacking, for example, the U-boat bases at Flanders. But it was all very unsuccessfully. And you see, it was unsuccessfully, but they tried harder to make it success, but just with the same measures, and that didn't work. In fact, the Allies had four categories of innovations. They used arms, they armed ships, they attacked bases of U-boats, especially in Flanders, and they organized nets, mines, minefields, etc., to prevent ships to go at sea. And at last, when the U-boats were at sea, they were trying to hunting them down. That was mainly the technology that the Royal Navy used to attack U-boats. But in fact, it was not very effective. Flanders, for example, was not effective at all just until December 1917, when they created a very deep mine channel barrage. But still, the U-boats could take the other way around Britain. And to give an example, all the measures that were made in the area of Flanders, still during the war, 25 of Allied ships were sunk from U-boats that were at their base at Flanders. So it didn't work at all. It did, in fact, it didn't influence the U-boat war at all until the change to the convoy system. And in fact, that was also remarkable. The convoy system was not a real new weapon. It was already, if you can call it a weapon, it was already an existing weapon, and it was in fact not a non-technology. So a non-technical solution. It was just a way of protecting ships, not a special arm or instrument. That was very, that's it's really remarkable that an old instrument can be used very successfully, while all other new technology is failing.
And then we come on to the other point you make, which is, I suppose it is an obvious one, but it's often underestimated, is the impact of people and humans and the fact that they observe and learn from experience in adapting strategic doctrines and the use of these new weapons. How did the experiences of 1917 shape both the Allied naval strategy and the German U-boat campaign and the functioning of U-boats at sea?
For example, one reason that the convoy system was adapted finally by the Royal Navy as a measure for protecting ships against U-boats was a very simple experiment that coal trade between Britain and France was already protected by ships, and it turned out to be very successfully. So it was a practical experience in the field that gave enough information for a change in strategy. And another way was that they also observed that it could be successful to let the fleet participate in anti-submarine measures. And in that way, the strategy also changed from primary offensive, it's changed to ways to find, to keep the enemy at its bases. So to prevent to that the German ships were going to sea at all. So it was also a change in strategy, but it was made due to practical experience in the war.
And then my penultimate question looks at the legacy of the U-boats campaign during the First World War. It's often seen as a precursor to wolf pack tactics of the Second World War, when the Kriegsmarine used sort of mass attacks on convoys. How did the experiences of the First World War lay the groundwork for future submarine warfare in the 20th century?
Ah, that's interesting. You can look at it in two ways. The first way, the First World War did not influence the Second World War, because on both sides, you see, the Germans were still not interested in U-boats in the Second World War. The priority was The Air Force and the Army there have only a very small amount of U-boats at the beginning of the war. In fact, the same as in the First World War. So in that aspect, they didn't have any made any experience from the First World War. And the Wolfpack system, it was already used in as an experiment in the First World War, but it wasn't adapted at all. And it was in a new, it was in fact not a very new invention, but it also took time in the Second World War to be implemented. And in the other side, the Royal Navy was still focused on battleships, heavy guns, sea battles, like in the First World War. U-boats, or the threat from U-boats, was not treated very seriously. One of the most important new things was the cooperation between surface ships and aircraft during the Second World War. That was really a new phenomenon, but it had to be learned. It was not implemented from the start. And of course, code breaking was also a very important factor that was not present in the First World War. But in fact, you see that it could have been learned much from the First World War that was not learned. So in a way, the experience of the First World War was forgotten in the Second World War, and it had needed some time to re-implement several measures.
So if we, again, this is one question that many historians find challenging, and I accept is, again, it's about learning from the past. So what lessons do you think we can take from the German U-boat campaign and the Allied response in the First World War that might be still relevant today in terms of naval strategy and technological development?
There are several lessons that can be learned. And a very simple one is that lessons of the past are often forgotten. Like I said, in the Second World War, lessons from U-boat campaigns, convoy systems, etc., were forgotten at all. For example, the Americans in the Second World War, they didn't start with convoy system because they thought it was not necessary. So it was a lesson that had to be learned by the hard way. Another one is more theoretical. That is a very known historian and of historian writer, von Clausewitz, in his work on war. He said defensive can be the stronger form of war. And in the case of the convoy system, the defense was the stronger form of warfare, because the convoy system combines defense with offense. You defend ships, but at the same time, you organize that all U-boats will go to the ships, and you are there with defensive measures so you can attack the ships. You just let them attack, and then when they attack, you attack yourself. So defense as the stronger form of technology of warfare. And of course, there is a complicated relationship between strategy and technology. New technology is not, the solution for everything. The real value of new technology depends on the way it's incorporated in the system, especially in the army. So a very promising new technology, when it is not used the right way, it will not have any effect. And of course, some other lessons, wars can't be won by technology alone. You have to have strategy, you have to experience, it's the way people are using technology. And what was also forgotten, that whatever measure or strategy or technology you develop, the enemy will also react on that, and you have to react on his reaction. So in a way, in the First World War, the U-boat campaign was also an arms race. I have U-boats, the adversary develops technology to attack the U-boats, so the U-boats have to be made more perfect. And that was especially seen in the Second World War. That was in fact also part of my original essay. I also looked at the Second World War U-boat campaign. But especially in the Second World War, you saw a development of technology from both sides. It was, again, an arms race, and the arms race element is still relevant in the present time.
And on that bombshell, Michel, thank you very much for your time.
Okay, it was a pleasure to give some explanation from my article. Thank you very much.
You have been listening to the Mentioned in Dispatches podcast from the Western Front Association with me, Tom Thorpe. Thank you for all my guests for appearing on this edition. The theme music for this podcast was George Butterworth's The Banks of Green Willow. It was performed by the BBC National Orchestra of Wales, conducted by Krish Russman, and produced by Biz Records. This recording is part of a collection of orchestral works by Butterworth performed by the BBC National Orchestra of Wales and supported by the Western Front Association. This is available from all good record stores under the record code BIS 2195. Until next time.